Hello and welcome to Inside Total Film. Thanks for trying us out if this is your first time, and thank you for coming back if you're not a newbie. I'm Total Film's Editor-in-Chief, Jane Crowther, and in the studio with me today are Total Film's Deputy Editor, Matt Matem.
Hello.
And Jack Shepherd, our Entertainment Editor of our website, Games Radar.
Hello.
Quick intros on these two then. Matt is a huge Christopher Nolan fan, and Jack's into Star Wars, and I'm a lifelong Marilyn Monroe appreciator. I like sweet and salty popcorn together. But they like Jack. What do you like?
I'm a big fan of salted popcorn.
And Matt?
I'm sweet and salty or toffee popcorn.
Toffee gone rogue. Coming up, we'll be looking at this week's big releases, letting you in on the secrets of how we make the magazine, and we'll be arguing about movies. If you don't have the mag but you fancy getting an amazing deal on a subscription, lucky you. You can get 10% off right now for listening to this podcast. Just use the code INSIDETF at the checkout at www.myfavouritemagazines.co.uk. With a subscription, you get the magazine delivered direct to your door, you get exclusive content in mag, and a special bespoke podcast just for you. Okay, hard sell over, let's crack on. Coming up, we'll be looking at this week's big releases, delving between the pages of the magazine, and talking about the film of the decade. But first, let's find out what's going on in news. Okay, Jack, what is big in news this week?
Well, I spent the beginning of last week in LA at D23, the big Disney Expo, where they announced hundreds of things.
Were you like just absolutely delirious with excitement?
I was delirious, that's for sure. I'm not sure. I was very excited. I mean, you introduced me as a Star Wars fan, and there was a lot of Star Wars news. You know, we saw exclusive Rise of the Skywalker footage where we saw Rey with a double-ended red lightsaber,
and there's lots of theories about what that means. Is she gone to the dark side? What's going on? What was the sort of general consensus in the hall?
So many theories. I mean, everyone was buzzing. I think most people think it's a vision, because no one can really see this wonderful character suddenly turning to the dark side. I mean, there have been like small keys, but yeah, going a whole 180 would be quite something.
I think it's got to be Rey doing something sneaky and kind of resourceful. She's got to be like sneaking in somewhere, I reckon.
I also like the way it looked like she was playing a guitar at the beginning before she wanged it into a two-pronged thing. It looked like a cool rock video.
Very cool.
Most people were just trying to work out what happened, because they only played it once. And obviously it's so quick. And you see this lightsaber kind of go shunting down. And everyone was like, were there more lightsabers? How many blades were there? And it was like no one was quite sure what had happened. And then suddenly they just kept cracking on with it. You know, they brought out Kevin Feige from Marvel Studios. They started going on about all the new Pixar films. We finally learned about Soul.
So excited about that.
So Soul, it looks at a jazz musician, a jazz teacher, who then catches a lucky break. But then when he's celebrating his lucky break, all of a sudden he falls down a hole. And then seemingly, not sure quite what happens, but kind of dies. And then his soul is wandering around, and he has to go to soul school. It sounds quite fun.
Sounds a bit Coco as well, like afterlife-y, is it that sort of thing?
Yeah, it had that kind of vibe. It was lots of bright lights, lots of fun. I think it was Tina Fey's in it. She's playing this kind of like wacky soul character, soul guide type person. It was still quite confusing, even being there. It's all quite meta, and I feel like no one's quite nailed how to describe it yet.
Yes.
I mean, a lot of people were like, have they gone too far?
Interesting, we'll see. But more importantly, did you get to fly the Millennium Falcon in the park?
I did fly the Millennium Falcon.
And how did it go?
And it went really well. Someone shouted punch it at me, and I got to punch it in the Millennium Falcon, and that was probably the highlight of my year.
Sounds great. Well, we'll find out all about everything that's coming out of D23 throughout the rest of the year, and we'll be talking about it here on the podcast. But what about this story that's come out about Linklater's 20 years in the making new movie?
So he's adapting a musical called Merrily We Roll Along with Bernie Feldstein and Blake Jenner. Blake Jenner was in Everybody Wants Some as well. They're going to be filming every year for 20 years, which sounds slightly insane, because are we still going to be around in 20 years' time? Is the Earth going to still exist? Who knows?
Well, that's very bleak.
Yeah.
But I mean, obviously he's got a form with this. I mean, you're a massive Linklater fan, aren't you, Matt?
Yeah, I love Linklater, and Boyhood's one of my favourite films of the past kind of 10 years. And I think he's kind of a much more daring and sort of bold filmmaker than he sometimes gets credit for, perhaps because he's kind of known for these sort of laid back slacker films. I think he does actually take a lot of risks with kind of form, and has done a lot of different types of films just over his career. But yeah, like I'm obviously part of me super excited because I just, yeah, just because I love Boyhood and love how well that sort of concept worked. But then, as Jack was saying, I'm perhaps not quite as cynical about the sort of future of life on Earth in 20 years. But I wonder if cinema will have changed drastically, or the way we screen films.
The way we consume it or anything. Like, will we be, you know, we were discussing last time about the choose your own adventure style of cinema. Maybe nobody wants a film that's been that long in the making. But I mean, at least it guarantees the actors work for the next 20 years. It's like a sort of payment plan for an actor.
Yeah, I'm wondering how that contract works. Like, if they suddenly blow up into the world's most famous actor, do
you still
got
to come back and do it?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
But it's just such a huge commitment for them as well, because surely they're going to be turning down so much other work. Because this is the other thing which I find is interesting about this in comparison to Boyhood, is it being a musical, surely it's just going to be more time intensive, I imagine, than Boyhood, which kind of focused on the smaller moments in this kid's life. And so by necessity, it was all kind of low key. And I think they just basically shot like a week or two a year.
I think it was 2 weeks every year.
Yeah, but whereas I feel like for a musical, because of the big set pieces and everything, you're going to need a bit more of a commitment.
Let's talk about our next story, which is this new filmmaker mode on TVs. What is that? Tell me, Jack.
It's a good question, because a lot of directors have had a real thing about motion smoothing on televisions. And this, finally, Nolan, Scorsese, Ryan Coogler, Patty Jenkins, they've all come together and they're trying to bring in this new TV setting. It's a UHD setting, and it will mean that TVs have consistent cinematic representation, which means they'll all have the right colour, contrast, aspect ratio and frame rate that the filmmakers want you to see the film in. Because obviously a lot of TVs kind of adapt things and change things. And this
motion
is
blur or whatever it's called. Motion smoothing, is it?
Yeah,
that's
motion
the one.
Smoothing.
Yeah.
Yeah, Ryan Johnson said, your Skynet is motion soothing. Luckily, your John Connor has arrived.
Oh.
Which is quite a lot, but
it's also quite interesting that they would be so behind sort of home entertainment, especially Nolan is a massive fan of you going and see film on a big screen, especially in IMAX. A lot of his films are. So it's just interesting that they're sort of realizing that we are consuming so much of our movies in our own home that they need to sort of get in on the act or get left behind.
And I guess it's also preserving their films for the long term, because obviously everyone, or kind of most directors, probably want you to see their film on the big screen the first time, but know that realistically in the long run, the kind of multiple viewings are going to be at home, and that's when you're going to kind of continue to watch it in years' time. So I think it is interesting, especially as motion smoothing just looks weird if you see it. It's kind of the setting that most TVs are on if you go into like a hardware shop, or if your parents get a new TV, the chances are that's what the setting will have. And it just looks a bit too smooth. It looks like people are moving too fast. It just
bit
doesn't
hobbity.
Quite look right. Yeah. And so I think, yeah, this to me can't be a bad thing if they're going to simplify making it kind of clearer, just to look more like what the director was looking at, you know, when they were editing the film.
Yeah, and obviously with something like Netflix, where that is the first time you're ever going to watch a lot of these movies, it's going to be on the small screen. So it can only be good for that, I guess.
Yeah, we're just going to have to shell out on our kit.
Yeah, how much is one of those TVs going to cost?
I don't know.
That's the question.
Yes.
Yeah.
And when will they be available?
We don't know.
Next year, some point. Okay, it's coming. Time to now focus on this week's big releases, starting with this creepy little number.
What you got, Sam?
There's not much left, just like the last time.
I call 6 kids missing or dead a major cause for alarm here.
Yeah?
This is Mike Hanlon, Bill, from Derry. It's back.
My granddad was right.
I saw a leper.
Georgie's not dead.
You're insane!
I'll be 40 and far away from here.
Georgie is dead.
It wants to divide us.
Hey, Bevy.
Okay, so that was It 2, which we've all seen. It frightened the bejesus out of me, some parts of it, but wasn't so successful in others. How was it for you, Jack?
I wasn't the biggest fan of this film. It's very long, but I really love the new cast, like Jessica Chastain, Bill Hader. They're all great in it. McAvoy's quite good as well. But I felt like we were retreading a lot of the same things that we did in the first one as well. Also because they split up the Losers Club quite well. They bring them back together and then split them up all on their own little adventures, where they all have their own little scare and become slightly formulaic. And I would have rather have spent more time with them all together.
I feel that way as well. It felt very sort of episodic, didn't it? And
yeah,
sort of
exactly.
Like it was Tales of the Unexpected sort of threaded together.
And they really did have great chemistry together as well. So that kind of made it feel like an extra shame that they got split up.
Yeah. I mean, the scene that I really loved was when they sort of first get together in a Chinese restaurant and things start to go very grim for them, particularly you'll never eat a fortune cookie without thinking about this scene. There is some really sort of alarming and horrible visuals in this that are really quite creative and nightmarish. Did it work in terms of the frights from the first one for you?
I like the film slightly more than Jack, I think. And I think Pennywise is just a fantastic character, and just the way he's kind of realised on screen by Bill Skarsgård, just the look of him, the way he acts, the way he talks and everything. I think he is one of those kind of great horror characters that will kind of stand the test of time. But one kind of way in which the film loses scares for me slightly is when it relies too heavily on CGI. I don't know what it is, but like obviously kind of a lot of people favour practical over CGI, you know, impossible. But there's something about CGI that just you kind of don't always believe there's something actually there. So I find physical effects are often more scary in a horror film. And so when kind of characters turn into what are clearly like CGI figures, that always kind of takes away a bit of the sort of tension for me. But there are some great practical effects in there. And like I say, especially once you have Bill Skarsgård kind of inhabiting that character with the makeup, and there's like, without going into spoilers, there's a kind of horrible moment with him where it's a kind of, you know, sort of flashback to an earlier version of that character. And that was a really kind of creepy image that stuck with me a lot. But then, yeah, some of the more obviously CGI moments just kind of took me out of it a bit.
Yeah, I think because we were talking about the scene with the old lady in it the other day, which was in the trailer, and Jessica Chastain, when she's facing off against this old woman, and there's all this creepy stuff going on in the background, and all the pictures start smiling. That scene in the trailer kind of cuts there, and it's just creepy. And then when you see it in the cinema, it goes on, and then it turns into this weird CGI monster-type scene.
A sort of giantess with bulging eyes that's sort of odd.
Yeah, and it loses something when it does that, because it was much scarier when, even when you saw the old lady kind of dancing around in the background.
I think that's where it's most successful, and that's where Skarsgård is so good. I mean, there's a scene, and again, no spoilers, but with a little girl, and it's only him talking, but just the menace and the horror that he exudes sort of just talking in the dark, and that's all you can see of his face in the dark, is far more effective than some of the bigger set pieces.
And I think as well, it's one of those films that I didn't find it totally successful, but I overall enjoyed it. And you really can, I think, see that there's been a lot of love and care gone into it. Like kind of director Andy Muschietti, he clearly like loves these characters like the losers and Pennywise. And they clearly really respect the source. And it's kind of, so it's where it fails, I think. It's perhaps where it tries to be too ambitious, perhaps. But it doesn't fail in terms of being lazy or being kind of one of those just, oh, let's rush out a sequel because the first one's successful. It does feel like kind of part of a whole story that's been treated kind of with respect.
So that was It 2, which is out in cinemas on the 6th of September. Go and see it with someone you can hold hands with. So on to this week's hidden gem. Being re-released is Midnight Cowboy on the 13th of September. Is it worth seeing that on the big screen?
I've never actually seen it on the big screen, so I actually want to revisit it myself, because it was one of those films that really made an impact on me when I was young. It was one of those kind of first really good films I saw that where I felt there was a lot going on in it. And, you know, yeah, so I definitely would like to see it again and sort of check it on the big screen.
You going to go, Jack?
Yeah, I think it's the kind of film that demands your attention as well. John Voight's so good in it. I just love his performance. So, yeah, I've never seen it on the big screen either, but I'd love to.
Yeah, and it's got that scene in it that everyone copies when they're in New York where you smack your hand on the bonnet of a taxi and shout, "I'm walking here." So you've got to see it just for that. And obviously the amazing theme tune. Okay, another special event that's happening at cinemas is Fleabag. One of the National Theatre live screenings is going to be the Fleabag show on Thursday, the 12th of September, which I personally will definitely want to go and see because I cannot get tickets for love nor money. Is that a good experience to see theatre that way?
I think so. I've seen a couple of things like in the past. Like one that sticks to mind is the Frankenstein with Benedict Cumberbatch and Johnny Lee Miller. And while it doesn't quite capture that kind of live immersion in the theatre, it is a nice way to actually get to see a sold out show that you otherwise might not be able to reach, and it's sort of anything that keeps cinemas a bit busier is also kind of good in my mind. So yeah, I think it's worth checking out.
And it's a bit cheaper.
It is a bit cheaper than the West End.
Because I tried buying tickets for that and didn't stand a chance. They all sold out in like 20 minutes.
Yeah. It's going to be a good one. So go and see that on the 12th of September. So quickly, let's round up our awards for this week. What's your award for this week, Jack?
My award is for the week. So it's the best week for headlines reading Oscar-worthy performances.
Yes.
So we've had a lot this week. We've had Brad Pitt in Ad Astra, Joaquin in Joker, and also Antonio Banderas in Pain and Glory, which only just came out in UK cinemas. You know, you've got three blokes who are all given, you know, career best performances, and it's been a great week for headlines for it because everyone wants to point that out.
What's your award, Matt?
And my award is for best child to adult casting for It Chapter 2, because that's one of the things I really enjoyed about the film as well, is they get it so spot on with the sort of losers when they kind of grow up into adulthood. And it's something which I think you could, the film could really lose you if you didn't believe in them. But there's just something like, yeah, just not only in the looks, but also in just the mannerisms. I just think they, and just the kind of personalities almost, they just, it was just such a good match-up job that I think, yeah, that's my award for the week.
My award is also from It, and that is one of the most convincing throwing up scenes from Bill Hader, who actually throws up towards camera. And instead of, you know, what really annoys me when you see a film and someone throws up and it's just like a mouthful of sick,
yeah,
and then it's done. Who throws up a mouthful of sick? And that, and so he actually like throws up and it's proper sick. And I was like, oh, look, I actually believe that. So that's my award, a sick award. So those are our awards for this week, and we'll have awards every podcast for random stuff. But let's move on with this month's cover feature, which is Todd Phillips' Joker.
For my whole life, I didn't know if I even really existed. But I do. And people are starting to notice.
You think this is funny? Is this a joke to you?
Murray, one small thing.
Yeah.
When you bring me out, can you introduce me as Joker?
So the embargoes have lifted. Everyone's seen it in Venice. Everybody loves this film. We're going to review it in more detail at the time of release. But for now, tell us about The Joker. Why are people loving it so much out of Venice?
I think part of it's got to be because it's just so different to what any other comic book movie is offering. And yeah, obviously you always get like Venice has a lot of big premieres, and so there's a lot of big exciting films, but this is far and away the most talked about one. And yeah, just people are kind of seem to be blown away by Joaquin Phoenix's performance. And there's a lot of kind of, I suppose, social commentary, you could perhaps call it, that there's been a lot of talk about that side of the film and how it might be read and how people might react to it. So that's taken up a lot of column inches as well this week. So yeah, it's been a major talking point.
There have been a lot of people comparing it to Fight Club, which I find quite interesting. So I haven't seen this film yet. Have you?
I have seen it, yeah.
I have seen it.
So everyone else has seen it. I am waiting in the wings being an online person, so I'll be closer to release. But the one thing that looks really intriguing from the outside is just the way people are reacting to it. I mean, there's been this discussion about inciting violence in film, which has come about because of Joker. Is that something that you can see from this film, or?
I mean, the premise of it is that he incites a huge sort of social breakdown in Gotham. But I mean, then would we say that that would happen if we watch anything on a film that we're incited to do exactly the same thing? I'm not sure. I mean, it's a massive discussion. You could do an entire podcast on that. But it is a very interesting film for our times. We are living in a Gotham-esque world at the moment with uncertainty and terrible things happening. So I think it would be interesting just to see what people interpret it when they watch it. I think you could interpret it all sorts of different ways, and that's probably going to be the pleasure of it. You go and see it and you take out of it what might be very different from somebody else you see it with. What do you think, Matt?
I suppose I'm always intrigued in these situations. Kind of, I really want to see what the public reaction to it's going to be like, because I don't know if people, the general public, will kind of look at it in the same way. I don't know if they'll be looking for the same kind of news angles that perhaps certain critics are looking for in Venice. So I think people might just go and see it and just enjoy the film and just appreciate his performance and just appreciate like a darker comic book movie rather than sort of, you know, thinking more deeply about that. And yeah, I think it kind of, yeah, it gets into very tricky territory when we start talking about people being influenced by films, because are we never going to have films with villains in them, you know, for fear of people copying them? I don't know. I think it's a weird kind of moral grey area.
I mean, it's something that Oliver Stone had with Natural Born Killers. You know, as soon as that came out, he was sort of blamed for a spate of murders that happened. So this sort of story is as old as the hills. It comes around every so often with a edgy and more challenging film. So we'll see. And we'll talk more about the film in detail and what makes it so good. We gave it 5 stars in Total Film in a future podcast. Also in this issue, Matt met Renée Zellweger to talk about transforming into Judy Garland for her new biopic, also called Judy. So there was a nose, there was hair, there was singing training, movement. What did Renée say about this process and does it work?
Well, this was a really interesting feature to do actually, because it was a bit different to what I've done in the past. And it's one of those films that when you see it, Judy, it's such a kind of amazing performance by Renée Zellweger that you just sort of, you instantly think, right, she's got to be like Jack was talking about the actor frontrunner. She's got to be the best actress frontrunner for this year, because it's just such a great performance. But then what was interesting was kind of talking to Renée about it. And also I kind of spoke to the team behind the transformation. So the people like the hair and makeup designer, dialect coaches, singing coaches, choreographer. And it really kind of really opened my eyes to how much actually goes into a performance like that. And it was also interesting because Renée was saying that when they kind of did the first makeup tests, they really went for it, the most extreme version, full kind of face prosthetics and everything. And she said she liked that because it kind of looked the most like Judy. But the director Rupert Gould and others said they kind of stripped it back a bit because they just didn't want it to kind of hamper the performance and they didn't want it to be distracting. So that was kind of interesting, where a lot of it came down to just finding that kind of middle ground where you still got an authentic performance whilst kind of, you know, very much thinking of Judy. So that was kind of a really interesting aspect of it.
It is that tricky thing of not being sort of Beau Selector and having sort of a mask on, but also not being sort of stars in their eyes either. And she saw it's sort of the makeup and the hair and the little tiny bit of nose that she has just give that suggestion of Judy Garland, and then her performance does the rest. I think everybody wants to avoid a sort of Nicole Kidman, the hours nose situation, where that's all you really remember about that performance, that she wore a big hat and a great big nose. So yeah, I think it's a really successful transformation, and it's really interesting to read how they did it. Also this month we started the Total Film Countdown of the 100 films of the decade, and you'll find 100 to 66 in our current issue. So of that selection, what's the strongest for you guys and why?
It's quite basic, because I'm going for the film that's at 66,
yep.
Which is Guardians of the Galaxy. Now, I'm not the biggest Marvel fan, but I really, really love this film. Again, probably because I love Star Wars and it shares a lot of that space exploration. I don't know, it's just such a revelation with Chris Pratt. He's so much fun in this film. I think they balance all the characters really well. It's a lot of fun. I just really enjoy the camaraderie of the main group, the way they come together. Even the villain, even though he's quite one-dimensional, it's still a good adversary for the group. So I just really, really enjoy this film.
So it's a film of the decade for you for being fun.
But in a way that, you know, you come out of it and you look to the stars and you think like, wow, the universe is huge. These characters have gone on this massive adventure and you've seen like all these worlds and you want to go out there and explore. I think it's just, it gave me that same feeling that I got after watching those, you know, the first Star Wars film and being like, wow, like, you know, there's so much room in the galaxy. And this film captures that again and gave me a similar feeling, especially seeing it in cinemas. I loved it.
Okay, Matt, what was your favourite out of the choice that we profiled?
Yeah, my pick from this selection so far, I think, would be Before Midnight, which is number 77. And partly because, as we mentioned before, I'm a massive Richard Linklater fan. And probably, I love Boyhood and I love some of his other films, but this series is probably my favourite of all his work and probably will be, just because, you know, when you feel like films are kind of made just for you and you kind of like just connect with it on such a sort of cellular level. That's how I feel about the Before trilogy. And I really think Midnight just works so well, kind of like catching up with them another 9 years later after Before Sunrise. And there they'd kind of had this sort of romantic reunion after kind of meeting as teens.
And it's filmed in real time. So it's him sort of messing around with time again.
Yeah. Again, it's kind of another bold thing. And you get kind of, there's just something about that like accumulation of feeling you get when you get the same actors returning and real time has passed. Again, this isn't makeup or prosthetics or anything. This is people who are just older. And just, yeah, just getting to see where the characters are, getting to see that things haven't perhaps quite worked out as you might have thought from, you know, the young kind of romantic couple who was so idealistic back then. And yeah, I just love it. I think it's just a kind of great film in its own right. But then as kind of part of that series, yeah, it just kind of adds even more to it for me.
Is it your favourite of the trilogy?
No, my favourite of the trilogy is Before Sunrise, I think, if I had to pick one. But I do just love the way they all work together. Mm. So yeah, this is my favourite out of this chunk of our top 100. And how about you, Jane? What's your favourite of this section?
I'd have to say Sicario. I was blown away when I saw Sicario at the cinema. The sound design was the thing that I just thought was so exemplary. The sort of insistent thrumming music and the tension in that one scene that you'll recall when they sort of go across the border and they're stuck in that border queue. And it's not that explosive in terms of stunts or CGI or anything like that. It's pure cinematic editing at its very best, and that score just making you absolutely like chew the inside of your cheek off trying to sort of maintain any kind of calm. I just think it's an absolutely excellent example of that. Now we come to our bust section, which in the magazine is where we celebrate vintage and retro films and the genius of them. And we have a section called Is It Just Me, where somebody argues a particular point of view on cinema and we discuss whether or not they're correct. So in this one, Marion Koob argued that it was better seeing trailers in the cinema rather than just sitting at your desk, watching them whilst you're eating your egg sandwich. What do you think?
I mean, I agree. I don't think there's anything better than seeing something on the big screen. But saying that, I do enjoy Trailer Club in the Total Film office, so...
We have a Trailer Club. Whenever the trailer comes out, we annoy everyone else in the office by watching it at high volume and discussing it immediately afterwards. So that community sense is really good, isn't it? Because you can immediately start picking it apart. But you can't do that in the cinema.
I have to say as well, broadly speaking, I think it's actually a really interesting one to think about. But overall, I've got to say I disagree with Marion and Jack to an extent, because there's certain films that were just so great when back in the day when you did just see the trailer for the first time in the cinema. Phantom Menace being probably the obvious one for a lot of people of our era. But for me now, seeing the trailers online, it's like a whole... It's a new part of the experience. So you get the fun of seeing it and you get the excitement of like counting down to it, you know, it being kind of teased. You kind of generally know what day the trailer is going to drop. Then, like we say, watching it together, like we always watch them together in a trailer club. You can rewatch them, pause them.
Yeah, but that's what I think's not good about it. The whole point of a trailer was that it was a teaser. So you'd go and see it at the cinema and it would flash before your eyes. Like Jack was saying when he watched the teaser for... the new Star Wars, and then you don't get an opportunity to revisit it and do screen grabs and put them on Tumblrs and you know, like shove them everywhere, and you don't get the chance to analyze it so much. You just saw it and then you just had to wait for the film, but you had the sense of the feeling of the film to then go to the cinema and watch it, but you didn't have all the information. And when you can do it on a laptop, you can just analyze it so much that maybe it takes the fun out of it.
I completely get both sides, because I also like analysing the trailers and actually being able to see them, you know, even if it's for a film that I'm not particularly interested in, but I would like to see the trailer. Like, I don't want to have to go to the cinema to see the trailer for Judy or something. But
you did have to go to the cinema to see Tenet, the new
Nolan.
Yeah,
you did. It's an interesting idea.
So I mean, he obviously, if Christopher Nolan thinks that's the best way to experience a teaser.
But that's very exciting. I think in that case where he's decided that clearly just wants to be a sort of cinema-only experience, that obviously, it makes it a really rare and exciting thing in this day and age. So I think, man, I just obviously can't wait to see that teaser, you know, when it finally, whether I get to see it in the cinema or however I get to see any teaser for that, I can't wait. But I kind of remember from the Phantom Menace days, the frustration of when you would go to the cinema and not see the trailer you wanted.
Yeah.
That feeling is still clear in my mind. So I just think, oh, like that's why I'm happy to have the online option these days for the vast majority of films.
So I think we can say that for Marion's question, it's not just her. It's sort of her, but it's not just her. So now that Jack's flown back from D23, Matt and I are off to the Toronto Film Festival, and we'll be reporting back next time on all the movies that mattered there, especially the ones that are starting their run for Oscar, because we are now officially in awards corridor, boys.
The race has begun already.
So I'd just like to say thank you to Matt.
Thank you.
And to Jack.
Thank you.
For being here, and thanks to you for joining us. And don't forget, there is a 10% off Total Film subscriptions with the code INSIDETF at checkout at www.mytotalfilm.com. myfavouritemagazines.co.uk. And you can follow us on Twitter at Total Film and Instagram and keep up with all the cakes we get sent by film companies and all the latest film news. Do come back and listen next time. We'd love to have you. Goodbye.